Welcome to Bimmercast number 50. It is May 12th, 2011. We've got a very special show for you today. I think it's sort of by popular request and our request, because I think we're both very interested in it. We're going to spend the show dissecting our review and dissecting Michael and I's time in the 1M. And it's going to go from track to road to versus the M3 versus the E46 M3, really everything. We want to do a deep dive into everything that is 1M, get it off our chest. And for those who aren't interested, move on. So stay tuned.
Did Gabe, we were in the deep end of the pool.
Yeah, we were. Well, I think obviously we've had a lot on the site, and we're going to talk about that next show. You've recently driven the 650i down in Cabo, Mexico. Of course, there's a lot of other BMW news out there, but we want to dedicate this show to the 1M. There's been so much enthusiasm, there's so much interest from readers and us alike. That, you know, we feel like it's probably let's talk about it, let's get it out of the way, and kind of go from there. And I feel like we have a lot to talk about. I mean, the review has just gone up on Bimmerfile, we've had I had a quick podcast through the actually during a track drive, but you and I have both experienced the car quite thoroughly, I'd say.
Yeah, we've driven it. We've ridden shotgun in it. We've done some drifting in it. We've done it all.
Absolutely. So the day started off with getting behind the wheel for me of a is it a sapphire? Is it sapphire black? Is that the black they're using?
Yeah. Yes.
I really wish they would have used Jerez black.
I really wish they would have used a different color. Period. But that's my opinion.
Neither here nor there. I think Laguna Seca blue would be on order for me. Regardless, getting behind the wheel of a sapphire black car, M1M, of course, and taking the twisties through New York State up into Monticello, I guess it's Monticello Motor Club or Monticello Motor Club, depending on where you are from. The car, the 1M, is, I think, you know, it's set in the review pretty straightforward, is really a bit of a revelation in what we've come to expect from M cars. And, you know, Michael, I think, I don't know if you've had the ability or the experience yet, and I know you will very soon, to drive these cars on the road. But on the road, one of the things that struck me more than anything beyond the power, or not beyond the power, but sort of, you know, in conjunction with the power and, of course, the handling and the feel, is the comfort and the compliance.
Yeah, I mean, Gabe, I haven't had the luxury of driving it anywhere else besides a track at this point, but, you know, I'll get behind the wheel of it. But from my experience on the track, I was actually kind of intrigued, once you slowed down and fiddled with it a little bit, how compliant it really was.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. You know, I think we've grown accustomed to cars being, you know, sort of the harsher, more, you know, the harsher they're sprung, the better they handle. And that's not necessarily true. And really, I think you do need a little bit of give to sort of kind of create feel and understand the motion of the car. The 1M does that well. Now, I will say it is buttoned down in a way the 135 doesn't come close to. The 135, of course, is known to be a bit of a wallower through the corners. And the 1M is certainly not that. In fact, it feels perfectly judged from a both an on track and on road perspective if you wanted to buy one suspension. So I've got to hand it to the engineers at the end. They really dialed in the suspension perfectly from my vantage point. So, you know, really wonderful. Getting to what else I really noticed on the drive up to the racetrack, the steering and the feel is what I have been wanting for so long. I mean, it's a direct ratio. I believe it's a 12 to 5 I'm sorry. What is the ratio? It's essentially, it's the same rack as the M3.
Yeah, it's identical rack. It's just the ratio has been changed to better suit the shorter wheelbase of the 1M.
It's a 12.5:1, and that is versus a 16:1 on the 135. So it is dramatically different. The old M3, the E46 M3, was actually a 15.4:1. So this is a car that has got a dramatically more direct ratio, and I think has a much more eager turn in as a result. And the thing that really, really I was so pleased about was the feel. The feel is back in an M car. Not to say that the M3 doesn't have that, but you know, with that longer wheelbase, with more weight, you know, you have a delicate feel there, but there's just more mass to move. Where the 1M really is tossable. You know, it feels extraordinarily eager.
Yeah, no, it definitely did. And that's the one thing that I can honestly say. I've driven the 135 on the track. I've driven, obviously, the M3 on the track and now the 1M on the track. And the most noticeable thing to me is actually steering feel in the 1M is something I have yet to experience in a modern-day M car. I'd say even so with the Z4 M Coupe.
I would have to agree with you. I mean, I hate to say it because I've always held that Z4 M Coupe as sort of the pinnacle of a modern M car. But I think in many respects, the 1M has, I mean, I cringe to say it almost has it beat as a total package.
Well, and it's less frightening, in all honesty.
Well, it's less frightening. It's easier
to drive.
It's
buttoned down better. Yeah, it's easier to drive.
The Z4M is a great car. It demands your attention. You push that sport button and, you know, you have to work to be smooth with that car. You're sitting so far back in the rear axle. There's a lot of things that go into that car that give it a presence that is very different. So it's almost difficult to really compare the two. And really where I ended up, you know, with my review is that this is a car, this is an M car that's very difficult to actually compare to any other M car. There's a couple things that you want to, you know, a couple cars you want to compare it to just straight away. E46 M3. This car feels so different, even though the power figures are very close. It has so much more torque. It is, I think the gearbox is better, frankly. It's lighter. It is has a shorter wheelbase. And it is so much more direct in its steering ratio that it feels, and I keep on coming back to this word, and I have to apologize, but it is so much more eager.
Yeah, and the chassis is definitely, I think, sorted out a little bit better as well. So.
Well, and I think the chassis, I mean, as much as I just love the E46 M3, and I put it up as in my mind, the best M3 of all time, and I know I probably will get hate mail for that, the chassis is much more rigid on the 1M. And I think that allows for a car to feel different, to feel just more solid, more not confident, but just sort of more organic.
And more predictable. It's a very predictable car once you get the feel of it. You know, the first couple of laps, the things that surprised me the most was actually the brakes. I went into turn one and I'm getting ready to apply the brakes where I do in my M3. And I was like, oh, definitely braked way too early on that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's something that blew my mind is the power of the brakes. I mean, they were incredible. The brake points on an M3 on the track, you know, were, you know, felt very natural, felt very normal. But the 1M, you could brake so much later into corners, and obviously that comes down to less weight.
Yeah, because they're absolutely, it's identical system.
Yeah, no, it's really, yeah, you're right. Identical brakes, identical everything, clearly less weight.
Yeah, pedal feels great, modulation's great. Fade was minimal. I mean, after beating it up for quite a while, and we were not so friendly to the car, and it really took a beating and just kept on going. So limited fade with the brakes, you know, it was mid-70s, it wasn't the hottest day in the world, but at the same time, we also didn't have a back straight to help cool them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was constant baking.
And by the time those cars were done, I mean, I'd say, I mean, they easily did 40 laps at least.
Oh, easily. Yeah, without a doubt, easily.
And yeah, very minimal fade. And I think you can put that down to stock pads, stock fluid, pretty quickly.
Yeah, you put some padded yellows in that, and you could go all day and not even have a concern. It's quite amazing how well they break. The other noticeable things for me as my daily driver is an E90 M3 manual transmission, 58,000 miles original clutch. So the noticeable things to me, Gabe, was the pedal throw and the pedal feel with the clutch pedal on the 1M, very similar to the 135. Well, because the transmission is basically identical with the addition of a dry sump.
A semi dry sump, from what we found.
Yeah, semi dry sump. Basically, it's just a large. It sounded like a little bit of a larger pan.
But it was a. But I. Well, yeah. It's unclear because I think it was a shallower, larger pan.
Shallower, larger pan.
That
yeah.
was that. Well, anyway, we'll talk about that later. But, and I think that's a good thing though. I mean, I think the 135 has a great six speed. This six speed has actually been manual transmission has been refined a bit to create really smoother shifts, better action.
Oh, it was very smooth. Engagement was precise. It was great.
And of course, my favorite shift knob of all time from the B&W catalog, the ZHP shift knob, is on the car and feels fantastic. The clutch felt good as well. And I think one of the things that the M3, and you know better than I do, Michael, I've driven an M3 quite a few times, but my experience has always been the throw is a little longer than I expect, and it's quite notchy.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. And that's because the gearbox is substantially beefier in the M3. And that's the other difference I noticed is that the M3 drivetrain has a little bit more clunk and a little bit more – it feels just a little bit more robust. Not to say that the 1M isn't a robust drivetrain. It just feels like the M3 is so over-engineered when it comes to the drivetrain.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. And I think, you know, one of the things that my review is very clear about is that I don't – personally, I'm not ever going to put the M3 down as the worst car here. The M3 is, in all technical terms, the better car. You know, going around the track, it was more confident. It was more solid. It felt give it a straightaway. You know, obviously, it felt like it would be the faster car around on the short loop, or I should say the south loop of Monticello. It would have been very close, but all that technology and all that engineering doesn't really equal fun to me. And where a Mini Cooper S can be infinitely more fun, you know, from, 10 to 40 miles an hour, I think the 1M is infinitely more fun, you know, under 100, 110 miles an hour.
I would definitely wholeheartedly agree with you.
And I think that's okay. I mean, I think the M3 is the superior car technically, especially at high speed. But the 1M has a delicacy, but also a brutishness about it. It's this sort of strange dichotomy because, you know, you have a sort of great tactile feel from the steering, but at the same time, this is a car you have to muscle through a track in a way that you do not have to do with an M3.
You're absolutely correct. It's not necessarily a point and shoot car. You know, the one interesting thing to me is the motor. Motor's fantastic. But the one caveat is you have to be easy and light on that pedal when you're in the middle of a corner because you could throw the car completely out of balance with all that available torque on tap. You have to learn to really modulate and feather the throttle with all that torque. But the other benefit of that is you can hit a corner and not necessarily be exactly at the right RPM and exactly in the right gear ratio for that corner and still pull through at the same speed because you have all that torque. So it works both ways. It works in your favor and it works kind of against you at the same time. But in the end, as long as you figure that out and learn how to use it, it's amazing.
Well, and I think it's easier to figure out too. I mean, I think the M3, it is more difficult, I think, to drive the 1M fast, but there are certain things about it that I think lend itself to, well, you can be in third or fourth gear, for instance.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. In fact, I could have been around the track. I was in third gear the whole time. And I could have shifted down into second. I just kind of didn't feel like it in one corner. But I didn't, frankly, and Michael, you could certainly agree or disagree, but I really didn't need to. Whereas the M3, I did need to. I mean, I needed to make sure that I was in the proper torque band within many of the corners that, you know, where the 1M was always in the torque band.
Yeah, no, you're correct. I mean, it got to the point where I was driving the 1M and I was shifting the second and revving it out and then shifting the third. And I'm like, let me just try keeping it in third and see what happens. I mean, literally, I'm going through at the same exact speed. So you really actually didn't even need to shift at that point because you have all the torque there. It's there. It's not anything to look for.
No, it's absolutely. I mean, I've driven the 135, the 335, and of course the Z435 IS, and this is a great engine. I don't know how else to say it. You know, this is not technically an M engine, if that's what you want to say. Sure, it's not, but it is a great engine. I mean, it is so flexible.
Yeah, and then, you know, it may not be a true M engine designed from the bottom up, but they did make some significant changes as we first, you know, announced that there was going to be some changes internally, which end up being the piston rings, and they've done some other great things with the software. They actually had to change the software from the 35IS because the Z435IS is equipped with a DCT transmission, and the 1M is manual. So that brings a lot of variables as far as the traction control and the torque curve and all sorts of things. So they actually had to rework it pretty substantially, and they just kept finding all this extra torque all over the place. So they kept having to remap it, and they figured it out in the end, and the torque bands and everything are a little different from both cars, but they work to the advantage of each car.
So it's interesting. So basically BMW has re-engineered this engine to some degree. They found more torque. They've obviously changed the engine electronics. Yet we have the same horsepower and torque figures in the Z435 IS. I
don't think that's really true.
I'm going to throw the flag up and say I call BS on that.
I call BS on that as well. You know, it's probably, for lack of a better term, missions reasons and other, you know, government stuff going on. But I feel that the car definitely has a lot more power than they're letting on.
And it feels like it. I mean, I can't, you know, Michael, you know exactly what I'm talking about when I say that very first sweeper on the course that we were just on, kept in third gear, flooring it. That car felt incredibly powerful, and back to back with the M3, I would have guessed the 1M was faster through that corner.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue that at all. I bet that would be pretty quick, pretty similar. The 1M probably was a little quicker because it seems to accelerate a little bit quicker, even though the numbers don't say so.
It explodes out of the box, I think, quicker. Yeah. And the thing that really, I think, surprised me, but also made me really kind of happy is that it didn't just sort of fall off either. I know it doesn't have the red line, the M3 does, but it did power through to the red line.
Oh, it went all the way through. It wasn't like it just fell off a cliff and, you know, you still have some power band left before you hit red line. No, it went all the way to red line.
Yeah, it's actually, it was actually a really pleasant surprise. And the engine really revved well, which was, again, another surprise. I mean, I know the 135 and the 335, of course, the N54 revs pretty quick for a twin turbo engine, but, you know, it's one of those things that you can't help but be a little nervous about. I mean, it will not rev as fast as the V8 and the E90 M3, or of course the S54 and the E46 M3. It just won't. But it is quite quick. You won't have any complaints. I mean, if you're complaining, listen, you've got the wrong car.
Yeah, you're not going to complain about heat management either. We were watching the needle because both Gabe and I were looking at each other like, this thing's going to eventually have to move, and it never moved.
No, and if it did, it was pretty much imperceivable to me. And again, we were on that thing. There was a lunch break, so got about an hour, roughly hour and a half break there. But there was an hour and a half. I believe it was an hour and a half of track time, and then another hour or so afterwards. And you're right, the thing was pretty solid.
Yeah, in the afternoon, literally, the cars never stopped moving. So,
well, I was, you know, it's funny. They had those M3s. They had a couple M3s at the track as well. BMW did. And you know, after driving the 1M for so long, I just thought, you know what? I mean, nobody else is doing it. I'm just going to
I accidentally got in the wrong car.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I thought the white car was really the white 1M and accidentally drove the M3. Whoops.
I just said, listen, I mean, can I get in there? They had to ask, and no, everything was cool. It is interesting. I mean, I the M3 seats, I think, are better.
The 1M seats are basically sport seats,
which are good seats. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think they're very, very good seats, but the cloth, they were cloth seats in the M3. The cloth seats in the M3 are hands down better seats. I also think that, in fact, I love the manual control of the seats. And one little thing that's interesting, the manual seats on an M3 or 1M actually go down about 1 centimeter further to the ground.
More helmet room.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, I can't help but, like, you know, think of that time, that moment when I was getting out of the M3 after driving and thinking to myself, shit, this thing is a better car. I mean, it just is. But, you know, it's more money, it's more weight, it's a different kind of car.
More fuel consumption also. That's a key point.
Well, and that's a good point. I mean, you know, Michael, you and I were in the car, and I think we had gone through about 8 laps on the track. I had driven that car all morning through the twisties. There was about 5 to 7 miles of highway driving, maybe a little bit more as well within that drive. But after that drive, after that morning drive, and then about probably a little bit more, maybe 8-10 laps on the track, the average mile per gallon was at 21.9.
Yeah, and I almost fell over because I was in the passenger seat, and you're like, what do you think the MPG is?
Yeah, and I put my hand over it so you wouldn't see it.
And then I almost fell over. I was kind of amazed, because if I ever see 21.9 ever in my M3, God just touched me on the shoulder and said, here you go.
You're going downhill at 53 miles an hour in sixth
gear. In neutral.
Yeah, no kidding. No, it's really true, and I know that you know, certainly the car won't have that in every situation, but it is a new kind of M car, and we've talked about that before. This is a car that, you know, is turbocharged and has inherently a lot more efficiency than any of the M3s since, I mean, probably the E36.
Yeah,
with 100 in reality, probably well over 100 more horsepower.
Yeah, probably. It's a quick little car. You know, on high speeds, on, you know, but in the U.S., I don't really know a track. I know Watkins Glen has a long, you know, fast straight that you could really get going over 150 at. But aside from that, in the U.S., I'm not sure of a track off the top of my head that has a straight that you really would get that high of speed, where the 1M may, you know, get a little scary. But yeah, otherwise, I think it's great. It's just really the aero, the drag coefficient and the lift on that car. It doesn't really have the downforce that the M3 has. So when it gets up to really higher speeds, I would imagine to get a bit of floaty and a bit twitchy because of the short wheelbase.
Yeah, and I would agree. And I think, you know, the car just in general wasn't quite as buttoned down as the M3 at the limit. And one thing that we should talk about at the limit, which I found interesting, is the car had a tendency where the M3, I think at the limit, is beautifully neutral to a hint of oversteer. I think the 1M was neutral with a hint of understeer.
Right, absolutely. I thought the same thing, but the caveat to all that is it really rotates fantastically. It really does. Is if you give it a little bit of accelerator, or even if you lift off, it tends to oversteer.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely true. And I think the other thing is that the car just has enormous grip. I mean, enormous grip. So it's not a situation where, you know, you just start to skate off into the sunset like the 1M. I mean, you really can rely on the grip in ways that you don't have the luxury with most cars.
Yeah, and it's basically, you know, you're rocking the same footprint as an M3, so you get the same width and the same tire size, because it's basically the competition package thrown on there, and the car weighs less. So
yeah, it's pretty astounding.
The grip is definitely there at all times. But you can definitely induce some smoke if you lay into it quite easily.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's no question. It's shocking. I would say it's almost shocking how much feel you have with how much grip you have. Couple that with the torque and you just feel like you have this little point and shoot rocket.
So Gabe, the one thing I was disappointed with, I'm going to be honest, I didn't really like the exhaust note.
Really? Okay. So you said that, I guess I wasn't expecting that much because I thought it was nice. I would have liked to have had more back off burble and crackle.
That's what I was missing.
And you know, it's interesting because I drove back with another automotive writer, and he mentioned he'd heard it. He was really, you know, he liked it. And I thought to myself, yeah, I don't think I heard it once today. Yeah, you're right. I really miss it. And I do wonder if, you know, is that a software tweak that an aftermarket company is going to come along and create? Because, all told, yes, you're right. It does not have the oral pleasure of really almost any M car. That's one area that it falls down. I thought it was better than I expected. It's better than the 135, but you're right. The exhaust note isn't quite there.
And the only other thing I can think of is that I really didn't take my foot off the gas all that much. So I didn't hear it. And the other thing I really don't like is the front quarter panel with the stupid vent. That's not a vent. I hate that.
Oh, you mean the crease?
Yeah. I hate that with a passion.
Oh, it's not trying to be a vent.
What's it? That's the only thing. Honestly, visually, that's the only thing on the car I dislike.
That, see, okay, so here's my take here is that is not trying to be a vent. That's just sort of a, you know, kind of a mold line. I mean, you think about like the previous Z4 had that, not that, but something similar to it. It's just a sort of an accent mold line. The one thing that drives me nuts is actually the fake vent in the back bumper. That is a fake vent. I mean, that's got like a little hole, a fake hole with like a black thing. I'm sorry, but you're not fooling anybody. That is not a vent, and it shouldn't be there. That's the one thing that drives me crazy. And I might add, the headlight cleaners, which are not pop-up as promised.
Yeah, they are just fixed.
Yeah, and I'm surprised by that. I mean, that was sort of the thought that, you know.
Yeah, I don't know if you could put the pop-ups in there with that big gaping, you know, intake.
Yeah, you're probably right.
And the M3 doesn't have pop-ups either.
No, I didn't know that, really.
Yeah, nope, they're not pop-ups either. Interesting. So nobody gets the pop-ups with the M.
So this is a car that I think, you know, Michael, I loved it. I mean, I'm going to be unabashedly positive here. I loved this car. I think it is, and I mean this with all the respect in the world to all the M cars. I believe this is absolutely one of the best M cars that has come out of BMW. Period.
Fair enough. I wanted to love the car as well, and I came away surprisingly loving it as well. Honestly, which for me is an accomplishment, Gabe.
I know. You're somebody who is not easily impressed. And listen, I was sort of programmed to love the formula. I was ready to walk away if necessary. I was ready to just say this is a good car. I'm going to go out and buy myself that M3 that's, you know, 8 months old that I can get for the same price. Clearly that's out there. I mean, you could go out and get a Cayman for the same price, slightly used. You can get a number of different things, great cars for that price. And I'm not entirely convinced that a few of those options wouldn't be technically better cars. This is the car I want after driving it though. This is the car that to me is going to give me a great car that I could call a daily driver. I won't be a daily driver, but it could be a daily driver and a great weekend car and a great track car.
Well, and that's the thing. I think that this package is a fantastic package. Mm-hmm. It's a great concept. They executed it amazingly coming from a parts bin perspective. They couldn't have done a better job, I don't think, in all honesty. And it's at a great price point. It's the cheapest M car, if you take into consideration inflation, ever. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, how do you get anything better than that? So, you know, I'm the eternal pessimist, I guess you could say. I always expect the worst and hope the best. That's just how I am, and it's because I'm from New York. So, you know, and I really, you know, I'm a skeptic, and I really just try not to believe the hype, and I've been anti-hype for quite some time. It's just, you know, the whole launch of this card kind of drove me nuts.
And you were ready to not talk about it anymore. You were done with it.
I was done. I was completely done with it. I was like, I'm sick of this thing. It's done. Let's move on. But I'm honestly very glad that I got to experience this thing on the racetrack. I love it. But would I purchase it? No. I think I will keep my E90 M3 sedan, and I will love it until it it doesn't want to drive anymore.
Well, and I think there you go. You have two opinions that essentially agree with each other, but at the same, or I should say they're the same, but at the same time sort of come to different conclusions. And I mean, you know, I have to tell you that if I had an E90 or E92 M3 in my garage, I would have a hard time parting with it because, and we've talked about that before, it is such a special car. It's a car that they will not make anymore. And as much as the 1M is again, my opinion, I believe one of the best M cars of all time already. And maybe it's premature for me to say that. It is not among the classic M cars with the sort of the classic formula of naturally aspirated bespoke engines. It just isn't.
No. And at the same time, I think the limited production of the 1M is going to make it almost at the same level in a few years. I really do.
I think so. I think I do agree, but I think it's sort of a different sort of reverence that people will have.
Well, on a separate note, Gabe, since we've seen each color, we've seen it in black sapphire, metallic. We've seen it in Valencia orange, metallic, and we've seen it in alpine white, not metallic. Mm-hmm. My choice of color, if I had to choose, would be alpine white.
Well, I'm glad you said that because that would be my choice as well. And I have to also sort of announce that after my drive, barring any other random changes, I do have a Porsche drive coming up. I hope that doesn't change anything. But I will be ordering an Alpine White 1M.
I will say that my second choice, Gabe, would be the Valencia Orange because actually under optimal lighting conditions, which we happen to have had that day, mm-hmm. It looks pretty damn good.
It really does. You're right. I think what it does is it sort of reduces the metallic effect and just gives you the orange.
Yeah, and it looks pretty good. It really did.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And it's a special color. It's you know, it's the only car that's going to have that color. It's going to be the one that you think of when you think of the 1M.
Yeah, and you know, I have a Jerez Black M3, and I love my hair is black.
Good
and
pronunciation of the word, the name.
Well, thank you. I do try. But I will say that the Black Sapphire did absolutely nothing for me with the 1M, and I just it kind of muted all of the lines and love that's going on with the car.
I believe it was referred to by somebody at BMW as the mini Darth Vader front end.
Oh yes, yeah. Well.
Yeah. So I couldn't agree more. I thought the black looked good. It is in my mind sort of a distant third for me. Again, Alpine White is what I'm ordering, but the orange looked fantastic that day. Ultimately, I for my taste, it's a little too garish, little too metallic. But I think it you know, give it some sunlight, and it is a spectacular color.
It reminds me. A few years ago, I almost purchased a Range Rover Sport, and they had a color called Vesuvius Orange, and it was very similar to that.
I actually, sadly, I know that color, so that tells you that I live in a city with a lot of Range Rover Sports running around, I guess.
Yes.
But so that's the 1M. I mean, I think, again, it's a positive review from really both of us, and it's funny, I wrote the review. Michael, I sent it to you this morning, and I you looked through it, and we sort of talked about it a little bit, and then I just said, "Oh, by the way, do you agree?" And you just wrote back, "Yes,
yes."
And I think it's just funny that, you know, we talk a lot about this, and we agree a lot of times, but we do come at this with a different perspective, and for I think for both of us to agree on 99.9% of everything, it's telling of the car and how good the car is.
Yeah, no, it's kind of interesting to me because it shows to me that the engineers actually really designed this car, because I always look at things from a function standpoint rather than a form, and they nailed the function on this thing completely.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, everything in that car feels purposeful, with the exception of those damn faux rear vents.
Yeah, and I'm so glad they did not put a Alcantara wheel in, because those things are just stupid.
They also disintegrate.
Well, that's where I was going with that, Gabe.
Yeah, no, and I think the interior, I think it has been done pretty well. I think some people have called it low rent. I don't know if I necessarily agree. I mean, I think it's fine. I don't expect something that's luxurious. The design of the car, we've talked about that ad nauseum. I love it. I think the first thing you need to do is put a black grill in there, BMW Performance black grill, and maybe, especially with a white car, that performance rear spoiler, and just drive it.
Yeah, and the one other thing I just want to quickly note is that the new rear taillights and headlights are so much better than the outgoing ones.
You're absolutely right. I mean, that, especially the headlights, they look fantastic in person, and they really give the car... I mean, people always complained about that sort of bug-eye look on the 1 Series, and I think the sedan, or I should say the coupe, kind of mitigated that, but this really further eliminates that problem. And the rear taillights, I think, are the best-looking taillights of any BMW out there right now that I can think of.
Yeah, they look pretty good.
I hate to keep on complimenting this damn car, but it's I was just thoroughly impressed with it. I think you were too.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is that, you know, we've been saying for a long time there's not going to be cars sitting on lots and all that. Realistically, there should have been cars sitting on lots, but some people have pulled out of 1M for one reason or another, or dealers of marketing them up to like $5,000 over MSRP. So there are some cars out there available. Some people couldn't stand the weight and moved on to other products, I guess you could say. And so there are some cars still out there. So if you're in the market, might as well hop on.
Yeah, they're out there. It's a, you know, it's certainly not a buyer's market. It's a seller's market, but they are certainly out there. Highly, highly recommend getting out there and trying to test drive one. I'm not sure if that's going to be possible, but check out our review. So with that, that is Bimmercast number 50. It's hard to believe.
We're the big 5-0.
Yeah, that's amazing. We'll be back. We will be back most likely next week with some more BMW news. Of course, the 650i review, Michael, that you did. We're going to talk about that, as well as a couple other things coming up. We've got, of course, M-Fest coming up. We've got that super secret lightweight BMW M3, which won't be coming to the U.S., and of course, we've got a limited edition M3, which we may or may not be able to talk about. Beyond that, we have the new 1 Series coming up. We have the front-wheel drive BMWs, BMW i. There's just an enormous amount to talk about over the next month and a half, as we get ready for the summer and then ultimately for Frankfurt. So until then, this is Gabe. Cheers.
And Michael, prost.